To discuss the real issues affecting the Tasman nations, this is Trans-Tasman Talk, jointly produced by the Unshackled.net and RightMinds.nz. Now, here's Tim Wilms in Australia and Dewa De Boer in New Zealand.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this fortnight's edition of Trad Tasman Talk on this Friday, the 11th of June, 2021. It is Tim Wilms here in the world's most, or the eighth world's most livable city, Melbourne, here, where we are now in lockdown light.
And it is Dewa De Boer here for RightMinds NZ, and I am streaming to you live from the world's most livable city, eight times more livable than Melbourne. that is going to be our first topic for the night as well. Does that stack up? What a strange coincidence that all of New Zealand and Australia seem to be ranked as the world's most livable cities.
Yes, this list was compiled by The Economist magazine, which is a globalist neoliberal magazine. The Economist intelligence unit, it is called, more like lack of intelligence unit, suspended their assessment of the world's most livable cities in 2020 because of the COVID pandemic, but they're back in 2021, and this is the top 10 that they came up with here. So Auckland number one, Osaka Japan number two, Adelaide number three, the top Australian city now, which, well, Adelaide used to be part of all the comedians' jokes about 20, 30 years ago. Wellington, they're equal number four with Tokyo, Japan. Perth made it to number six. Zurich, Switzerland, number seven. And Geneva and Melbourne equal eighth. And Brisbane rounded out the top 10. Sydney was the only mainland Australian capital city to miss out on the top 10. They came at 11th.
So one of the things that seemed kind of, I guess you mentioned that suspended it in 2020, and here we are in 2021. It could just very well be that most of the cities of New Zealand, Australia, Japan, and Switzerland are about the only, located in a few of the only countries in the world where people can actually walk around in their cities for the most part.
Well, in Melbourne for the past year, yeah, that hasn't been the case.
No, that's right. No, you're right. Not in Melbourne. Yeah, yeah. And Auckland has had four lockdowns now.
Yeah, we're equal four lockdowns.
That's right, four lockdowns. But I think a lot of the other places have had more, at least in Europe and America. Some places in America have had lengthier lockdowns, perhaps. But looking at these numbers, right, they're insane. Infrastructure for Auckland, 92.9. And you compare that to, that's the same rating as Tokyo in Japan. Is Auckland's infrastructure as good as Tokyo's? I mean, that's a joke, right? These people are not serious. It takes
super fast bullet trains.
Exactly. Our trains travel at an average of maybe 20, 25 kilometers an hour. It takes you an hour on the train to get 20 kilometers. Buses are even slower. Cars, same thing, takes you an hour to get anywhere. It takes you an hour to travel 20 kilometers easy, unless it's a very, very quiet time of day. We've just downsized a whole bunch of roading projects. So three or four of Auckland's largest road infrastructure projects have now been downgraded. It's just been announced that we're going to get a nearly $1 billion cycle bridge over the harbour. That's going to be very, very useful to the small minority of champagne socialists on the North Shore. But on the whole, it would be nice to have a cycle bridge. But $1 billion, I mean, that's banana republic corruption. You know, that who spends $1 billion on a cycle bridge? It's absolutely insane.
The criteria that the Economist Intelligence Unit used to rank the most livable cities, I'm not sure if they actually consulted with people who have lived in those cities the past year, but it's stability, whatever that is, healthcare, culture and environment, education and infrastructure. Interesting, human rights not there, which I'm sure wouldn't do too well with at the moment.
We've given up on human rights. I mean, sorry, culture, perhaps in terms of culture, I mean, Auckland is probably one of the most multicultural cities on the world in terms of having large groups of people from, you know, from very many different places in the world living in Auckland. And it's, you know, education, really. I see. Yes. Thank you, Dr. Foster. The former mayor of Auckland, pants down, Len Brown, did want to make Auckland the most livable city, which probably means the most globalist, globalist friendly city in the world. That's probably the only real criteria.
This list is basically about, because a lot of these cities, what they also have in common is high house prices.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Insanely high house prices in Auckland. And I'm guessing.
So it's more a list for globalists.
Yeah, if you're rich. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Auckland is a nice place to live if you have lots of money and you're fairly comfortable. Sure. We can give it that. I'm living in Auckland. I'm happy to live in Auckland compared to any of these other cities. I'll stay in Auckland, thank you very much. But I would not say that this is the quote unquote most livable city in the world for it's insane, and yeah, it's for globalists.
Well, Melbourne used to be the world's most livable city a decade ago, but it's taken a tumble, particularly since the election of the Andrews government in 2014. It was interesting.
But he was so globalist friendly. How could that have happened?
Yes, well, looking at the criteria here, Melbourne did the worst on healthcare, which, well, in the second half of last year, the state government basically failed to quarantine the vulnerable, but locked up all the healthy there.
Mm-hmm.
Culture and environment was that we got about 88, which is average. Education, we got 100. They must be going by the cultural Marxist standard of education there. Mm-hmm. Infrastructure, we got 100%, which, even though like every person who lives in a big city complains about the traffic, but as we've seen with all these positive COVID cases in Melbourne over the past 2 weeks, they've been bloody all over Melbourne, in regional Victoria, even getting up to New South Wales. Mm-hmm. It's because Melbourne, it is actually really easy to get around compared to a city like Sydney. The reason that would have fallen down the list is because, well, Sydney, there's basically only a few roads in. You can only get to certain places via a couple of roads. I mean, the reason why Gladys Berejiklian was able to lock down the northern beaches last Christmas and New Year is because she only just had to lock two bridges away from the northern beaches, and the area was locked down. I mean, with this, with the lockdown that we've just had, Victoria Police, they didn't want to do another ring of steel around Melbourne because it was just too labour-intensive exercise, and people could just slip through with the back roads anyway. So yes, Melbourne is really easy to get around. So I can understand 100%.
Mm-hmm. Very good. All right, we had some. I guess you've had the lockdown and various other restrictions. Are they slowly being eased now, or
the spin? We had an easing which came into effect today, so the reasons for leaving the home, they've now been lifted, but there still are conditions when you leave your home. You cannot travel more than 25-kilometer radius from your home. Still have to wear a face mask indoor and outdoors. And also, there's still businesses that are not able to be open, such as gyms. No private visitors to the home are allowed. The big events in Melbourne, such as the AFL, we don't know when they will return. In regional Victoria, they've got it slightly better in that they don't have to wear face masks when they're outside, and their gyms are open, as is their brothels. They're allowed two visitors to the private home per day as well. But we're all pretty much still locked out of all the other states and territories. So the other criteria being able to escape that it still largely, well, particularly in Melbourne, you're trapped.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the brothels there. That was something that I saw today had popped up.
They're not open in Melbourne. There's been a lot of
people saying that they're okay. So that's not necessarily true. People who were saying that prostitutes are essential workers in Melbourne. It's not quite true. Or
no. The brothels in Melbourne are closed, but they're open in regional Victoria.
Oh,
gyms are closed in Melbourne, but open in regional Victoria.
Still, it's absolutely insane. But yeah. People love it, right? The people are still happy. Everybody still loves the lockdowns.
Although the Victorian government's approval rating has fallen to below 50%, their approval rating regarding their handling of the pandemic, 48%, which is that's the only state and territory government which is below 50. And of course, we still have Dan Andrews still on sick leave after his stair fall on March the 9th. So we've had Acting Premier James Molino do the daily press conferences. He still uses the same words as Dan when saying, "Oh, even because we had zero cases, local cases today." It's like, this is not over. This is their mantra. It's not over, even though we've got there's still undetected cases out there. Even if you've got a sniffle, you need to get tested. We want the testing rates up so we can be absolutely sure there's hardly any out there. So yes,
is there any status on the return of Dan Andrews?
Well, he did on his one of his few social media posts said that he was aiming for a June return. We are in June, but there's still about 3 weeks left in June. You've got to get the okay from the doctors. But because he has basically done only about three or four social media posts the last 3 months, given that he was so dominant during our lockdown of the second half of this year, the Daily Dan, 120 press conferences in a row, and then he's just vanished. The rumours and conspiracy theories have continued to thrive. And obviously with Melbourne back in lockdown, a lot of Melburnians have got a lot of time on their hands to go down the rabbit hole. And so in response to the renewed chatter about the rumours regarding Dan's stairfall, Stairman Dan, he is known now. His wife, Catherine Andrews, tweeted out this image on Saturday night. On the tools again, practice makes perfect. I love this one, getting better every day. Now, the problem with this photo, we can't tell whether that's actually Andrews. Dan's eyes.
Or whether that's Dan.
And his ears, which he has distinctive big ears, are primed back. And if you wanted to dispel, because one of the theories was that she had left him, uh-huh. If you wanted to dispel that theory, you could have taken a better photo.
Yes. So the conspiracy theories on whether she's left him or whether he's alive to begin with are reinforced by this photo.
Yes. And given how image conscious team is, I can't believe that they put this out.
And they haven't. How many hours ago was this? They haven't corrected this at all by making an extra post.
No, not at all. So then we had on Monday morning, the Victorian Liberal opposition really sort of put to the front of the headlines these rumours and conspiracy theories. This was released by the Liberal shadow treasurer, Louise Staley, who said, these are the questions Dan Andrews must answer before he comes back to work. What time did the incident occur? Who was in the house at the time of the incident? What is the address of the house where it occurred? Who owns the property? What time was an ambulance called? Who called the ambulance? What time did the ambulance arrive? What ambulance station was the ambulance dispatched from? Who made the decision to take the Premier to Peninsula Private? Were the police contacted? Did the police attend? Has Dan Andrews been interviewed either formally or informally by the police in relation to anything that occurred over that long weekend, because it was over the Labor Day?
These are rather specific questions, like somebody is fishing for an answer that they may already know the answer to.
Well, all the Dan stands on Twitter and the Labor state MPs were basically said, how dare you ask these questions? You're just like one of those QAnon conspiracy.
That's right. Nothing. Stem and Dan edition.
But Ambulance Victoria, in response, did release a statement with Dan Andrews' permission. It states that Ambulance Victoria received a 000 call for an ambulance at 6:36 a.m. on Monday, the 9th of March, 2021. Except there was no Monday, the 9th of March, 2021. It was a Tuesday, the 9th of March.
The plot thickens.
They didn't get this statement right. That date doesn't exist. For a patient who had fallen on steps at a house in Sorrento. Now, the reason why the suburb is important, because one of the rumors, conspiracy theories is that the stairfall happened at businessman, trucking magnate Lindsay Fox's holiday home in Portsea, which is the next suburb over on the Mornington Peninsula from Sorrento. So based on that statement, it wasn't at Lindsay Fox's place. Now, the Fox family did consider suing the website that really sort of drove the turbocharging of these rumors, the cairnsnews.org, but he didn't follow through, Lindsay Fox, which is probably wise, right? Rather than draw attention to the rumors on this this website. But it says here that the triage determined that the case was appropriate for an ambulance response, and an ambulance was dispatched from the nearest ambulance branch in Sorrento under normal road conditions at 6:47 a.m. The ambulance arrived at 7:01 a.m. That's a pretty good turnaround there. To the Melbourne woman who died recently waiting hours for an ambulance.
The services always work excellent for those for the oligarchs and politicians and the anybody else who's important and might need them quickly.
And also the other interesting thing here is that there were two public hospitals on the way to Peninsula Private, which is all the way up past Frankston, so miles away from Sorrento, nearly an hour away. So it says here that the patient requested to attend a local hospital in order for attending crew to remain within the area once cleared from the area. Local hospital. Even though it's got the word Peninsula in it, it's not really in the Mornington Peninsula. It's in the city of Frankston. And we also had the Victoria Police Commissioner, Shane Patton, confirm that there was no police call to a property in Sorrento. We don't attend, like, when someone slips over at a house.
Yeah. Okay, so the conspiracies have been dispelled for the most part.
Well, there's still a lot of, I would say, unanswered questions. Obviously, it'll be interesting what Dan has to say when he does return, or there's people who say he won't return.
We'll have to follow up on that in 3 months or so and see how things are going. Obviously, one of the side effects of having a big outbreak will have been a surge in your vaccine rollout. I suspect you would have seen a big increase there. In New Zealand at the moment, we are still vaccinating frontline workers and family members, close contacts, relatives of frontline workers. We're supposed to be in the middle of vaccinating the general population, but many of the listeners of the show may be glad to hear that the general population will not be getting access to any vaccines for the foreseeable future. So if you're a frontline worker or Polynesian or over 65, you can probably get a vaccine, but there is an interesting catch there that Matthew Hooton, who's a commentator, a sort of a right-wing-ish commentator for the New Zealand Herald, has pointed out that according to the government's own data, the vaccine supply in New Zealand will run out next week based on what's been delivered. So unless...
All the, Twitter blue drops in Australia, when Jacinta announced that she'd secured these Pfizer vaccine, it's like, oh, she's done the job already.
Mm-hmm. But they haven't arrived yet. So so according to government data, it could be wrong. The government data could be wrong too, by the way. We can't rule that out. But according to their own data at the moment, they are on track to run out, which could be why it's been going so slowly.
Well, in Australia, we've got enough vaccines to meet demand within the eligibility criteria. After the latest outbreak in Victoria, they opened up vaccine eligibility to the general population, to those age 40 and over. So there has been a vaccine surge, and the Age newspaper has this infographic now. It's called the Race to End the Pandemic. And I think that this title is a slight dig at Scott Morrison, who said, oh, the vaccinations, it's not a race. And as you can see, we're not doing as badly as New Zealand, but still way behind the US and UK. But 2% of the population are fully vaccinated. Nearly 20% have had their first dose. Obviously, in Victoria, there have been more vaccines administered, though New South Wales and WA are beating us with fully vaccinated. But we've had the most first doses out of the states, at least, mm-hmm. or the mainland states, I should say, and it's going to keep ramping up. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the year, they've got more Pfizer and Moderna that are going to be coming here. So Scott Morrison's described that as the sprint right at the end of the marathon.
One of the things around rumors of low supply of vaccines could be that generating FOMO. People will be worried that there won't be enough of them, and maybe it will increase people wanting to get it. But certainly here in New Zealand at the moment, there is no shortage of people who would be more than happy to take the vaccine. I'm, of course, as we have mentioned on the show many times, more than happy to never, ever, 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 ever get it. But it'll be interesting to see if everybody else can, everybody who wants it can even get it. So that's something that's currently unknown. So we're going to check in again on this probably in about a month's time to see if the government's promise to have general population access by July will be followed through, or if they will simply delay by a month every month, which seems to be a common tactic. Next month, and then when it's next month, next month, and on and on it goes.
Well, you have to rely on, in New Zealand, the importation of the Pfizer vaccine, mm-hmm. the same with us here. But in Australia, we've got the local production of the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is more like a traditional flu vaccine, while Pfizer is that mm-hmm. new mRNA technology, and what is it, the blue drops, as I call them. They love Pfizer and think that how difficult can it be to just whip up an mRNA factory in Australia? Come on, just get the Pfizer flowing. That's their level of understanding. But of course, AstraZeneca, the confidence in that vaccine, public confidence in that vaccine, continues to take a hit because of the rare blood clotting that can be a side effect of it. We had the second death in Australia linked to blood clots linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine. That was a 52-year-old New South Wales woman. So in terms of, the local death toll from COVID in 2021 compared to AstraZeneca, there's been two more AstraZeneca deaths that there have been COVID deaths, local deaths in Australia, if you catch my drift.
Oh, certainly. And that's, it seems like that's going to be increasing because the number, same thing. We haven't had a single COVID death in New Zealand since, I guess around this time last year, nearly a few months to go. But we have probably had a few unrelated, or at least we have had at least two people mysteriously die within a few days of getting their vaccine. But so far, the media said that there's absolutely no connection. So we can't give any official statistics in New Zealand, of course. But there is no consistency here where previously, if anybody had died within a few days of contracting or testing positive of COVID, that would have undoubtedly been counted. But when it comes to following up on people who have mysteriously died after receiving the vaccine, those are just conspiracies and we will never, ever, ever know.
We've also had more deaths in Victoria this year due to the storm flash flooding that has occurred this week than from COVID. We've had, because we had a massive storm Wednesday night, which resulted in flash flooding in outer eastern Melbourne and in the Gippsland region. Two people tragically died due to the flood waters. Does that mean we should just lock down all the roads? We should have a road lockdown? I'm not meaning to.
No, you're not serious, but exactly. But no, that's not. Yeah. That's obviously not something that's going to happen.
I'm not meaning to obviously mock their death. It's an absolute tragedy, but sadly, when there are these extreme events, some people do die. But the most important thing, if you do have to evacuate your home due to the flash flooding, before you leave your home, make sure you've got your mask, your hand sanitizer, and social distance while you're fleeing your flooding property. That's the most important.
And I was just checking over some of the guidelines here in New Zealand because you still have requirements for masks on airplanes and public transport in Auckland. And one of the things, one of the reasons that it mentions when it says if you don't need to wear a mask if there is an emergency. So if you're involved in any emergencies, the government is kindly telling you that you don't actually need your mask if there's an actual emergency. But when you mention the lockdowns for the flash flooding, you've got to be careful because the climate cultists have already been talking about lockdowns to save the climate. So soon we're going to have weather
because
lockdowns.
Because we've seen how easy compliance is with lockdowns and how the public support them. So they're sort of like, hey, we could probably get away with climate lockdowns, which is, ban car usage and ban meat consumption.
Exactly. So you can joke about it now, but before you know it, it'll be real.
Now, also,
we have had a. You go first.
Yeah. Also, we have coming soon. The Scott Morrison has announced that in the next month we will be getting Australians will gain access to certificate of vaccination ID for COVID, which will be able to be stored on their phone through either the federal government MyGov app or the Medicare Express Plus app, which it's just going to be available. There's there's currently no official vaccine passport. This is just a certificate to show whoever wants to. And also,
it's not a vaccine passport, it's a vaccine certificate.
Yeah, and this is on top of the expanded QR code surveillance that we now have in Victoria because, well, we've joined South Australia and Western Australia in that you have to QR check in at supermarkets, retail outlets, even just getting a takeaway coffee because there could be some fleeting transmission that contact tracers need to hunt all those people who, even if they've just got a takeaway coffee or just bought cigarettes, and also they're wanting to include offices with QR codes because one of the big outbreaks during mini wave, you could call it, in Melbourne, was it an office, Stratton Finance in Port Melbourne?
In New Zealand, we never had them compulsory sign-in, compulsory scanning, but it is compulsory for all businesses, including offices, to display the QR codes. So they're still hidden away in places, often tucked around corners because they're ugly. And people don't want them plastered around in public. But some businesses, of course, who love the lockdowns, they have them prominently displayed, you know, little shrines to COVID around the place. But they're getting less and less because obviously nobody signs in here. And it's thankfully never been compulsory.
Yeah, I've noticed that the supermarkets, to avoid basically congestion at the entrance with all the customers now QR checking, just basically all around the front of their shop is just like about 20 QR codes. So you can to make sure that people are socially distanced while they're QR checking.
Yeah, yeah. We have had some good news on the new Zealand front while that the...
that was the title of the focus of our last show, the 60 Minutes Australia story about New Zealand ditching Australia for China
fast Chinese buck. Yeah. So Scott Morrison came to visit New Zealand, and Australia and New Zealand now, the leaders, I was going to say the leaders fully vaccinated, but that's not true. Jacinda's not even vaccinated.
Yeah, yeah. Scott Morrison is.
And Australia and New Zealand are in love once again.
Yes, yes. This
beautiful photo.
The image there. But since Jacinta's not vaccinated, I mean, Scott Morrison should be careful. There could be like a new mutation that he could get from Jacinta,
right,
maybe with some equine strain. Because all the different variants now. In Melbourne, we have two variants on the loose. There was the original, because they're not named after their country of origin anymore, because
that's racist.
It's not racist to use the Greek alphabet to name COVID strains. So the strain that escaped from hotel quarantine in South Australia that caused the outbreak, which led to the lockdown, is called the Kappa variant, which is from India. But then they discovered this variant in a cluster around a North Melbourne primary school, the Delta variant. We were told that the Kappa variant by our chief health officer Brett Sutton was an absolute beast, but apparently Delta is this is another Indian variant, is even worse. And it was later confirmed that this leaked from hotel quarantine in Melbourne from a Sri Lankan return traveler. They don't know how it got out of hotel quarantine, but it did. So we've had two separate cluster outbreaks variants there.
Where's the Chinese strain?
Yeah, yeah. Where's the Wuhan strain? What's that called? Is it the Wuhan strain or the Wuhan Institute of Virology strain?
Yes. So we shall see. good comment you have to highlight there. Beta South Africa. That's actually, we should have checked which countries were alpha and which countries were gamma.
Oh, we'll go back to it.
Yeah. Okay. So
yeah, so what is that? Some alpha is the UK
/K
the tenth strain. That's apparently because they've discovered another variant in the UK now, the Yorkshire variant. So this was the original super strain,
Yorkie flu.
Which, of course, apparently these, what is it? Remember that, Alpha strain, that was the original super strain, but the UK has miraculously been able to flatten the curve, as has India been able to flatten the curve of both the Delta and Kappa strain. I mean, they were up to 400,000 cases per day. Now they're under 100,000. If this is such an uncontrollable strain, how do these countries of origin manage to flatten the curve?
Yeah, exactly. And a country like India too. We have had some announcements around Jacinda today, or something that involves Jacinda. A new film has been announced that will be made about the Christchurch mosque shooting, and it's going to be called "They Are Us," which was the hashtag that liberal Twitter space picked up.
Well, it was said by Jacinda as well.
And Jacinda, yeah. But she's liberal too, right? So, so They Are Us was Jacinda's big rallying cry. And then she did all this heroic stuff to take down Brenton Tarrant. And they're going to make a movie about this. I guess it'll be like based on a true story kind of movie. And they've even picked the actress who's going to be playing Jacinda, what's her name?
Rose Byrne. She's an Australian actress. She recently played Gloria Steinem, the iconic feminist in the miniseries Miss America, where they had Kate Blanchett, another Australian actress, as Phyllis Schlafly of the Eagle Forum. So
I won't comment on whether like the resemblance, whether or not it's a good resemblance, but you know, we'll have to wait and see.
She puts on an American accent for a lot of her movies, Rose Byrne. So I'm sure a New Zealand accent won't be too far out of her capabilities. Obviously, she might have to have some false teeth put in.
Oh, they may have to make some dentures made. Yes. Yeah.
I remember years back.
Yeah, they have not yet. I see in the chat. They have not yet announced who's going to be playing Brenton Tarrant either. It seems a little bit strange to be making this movie. Indeed, I believe for once everybody was horrified.
They might not show him. Like,
probably not. They won't. They've already said it's going to be focused not on the shooting but on the aftermath of the shooting. While I think on the right wing, people humored and horrified by this. On the left wing, it was absolute hysteria. So they have accused this Hollywood production company of having a white savior mentality complex. Are mocking the "They Are Us" tagline and saying that basically Jacinda Ardern is a white savior. So this is a movie made on the on an event of white supremacy with a white savior complex and something.
Well, she's something the white, white minister of New Zealand who just happens to be white. I mean, a prime minister or president of a nation, well, they can be multiracial, but a lot of them.
So the left hate Jacinda because she's a white savior has a white savior complex or is held up as being a white savior. So that's bad. Jacinda bad, white bad. I'm laughing at some of the comments. All right, we're going to move on to a different topic now.
But they were planning, this was years back, to make a miniseries about the Rudd Gillard leadership with Rachel Griffiths, a famous Australian actress who began a career in Muriel's Wedding, but it never got made because the TV networks here concluded that everybody hates Julie Gillard and wouldn't want to watch a movie sympathetic.
So, what's going to happen here is they're going to, if they haven't already by the time that we're doing the show, because I haven't followed up on this in the last few hours, but they will cancel this. I'm fairly confident this is going to be cancelled because of the massive outrage. They claim they were going to film it in New Zealand. Nobody is going to want to work on this movie or get involved in any way. The families of the victims...
They're not going to get Peter Jackson to direct it.
No. The families of the victims have, in fact, denounced this movie today. So, as you can imagine, you would too. The whole thing is obviously, a pretty disgusting way for... some Hollywood execs to try and pick up a little bit of not really picking up a little bit of cash, but picking up a bit of clout, perhaps. It's quite a just a
maybe they'll
sad thing to see.
Reimagine it, just focusing on Jacinta Ardern, her entire prime ministership.
Now that you mention it, that may be what they got. That may be the route they take. They'll just make it a biopic of Jacinda Ardern's glorious life. Overlord Jacinda.
And then they can make a sequel when she's Secretary General of the United Nations.
They could call it Comrade Jacinda.
Now, going on to, let's move on to the crime update, because there's been, I'll start with, one of Victoria's local jailed political activists, Thomas Sewell. We broke on this program, nearly a month ago now, that he had been raided, arrested and charged with armed robbery and other offences, and has been remanded in custody since. He was denied bail this week. This was the Age's headline. They called him the self-proclaimed leader of Australia's National Socialist Movement. I don't think that's correct there. So this is because it was a Zoom court hearing, because we're in lockdown. It says here up to 15 neo-Nazis, including Thomas Sewell, 28, terrorised hikers by using knives and forced to smash the car they were in at a camping spot in the Cathedral Ranges last month. And it mentions here that he was already on bail for allegedly assaulting a Afro-Caribbean security guard outside Channel 9 on March the 1st. Detective Senior Constable Michael Taylor told the court the hikers had crossed paths with the neo-Nazis in the park, and that a bushwalker remarked to a friend that the Caucasian man in black T-shirts must have been the Nazis in the Grampians. Later that day, one hiker filmed the neo-Nazis. One of them saw them and yelled, "Antifa!" And the group, some in balaclavas, confronted the bushwalkers, began kicking the car, smashing windows, demanding the hikers' phones. There is no evidence the six hikers had any connection to Antifa or any other left-wing organizations. Well, that's because Antifa is just an idea. It's not a real organization.
No. But it sounds like they've got some serious charges.
There's more here. One hiker crashed their car into a boulder in an attempt to get away. So police alleged Mr. Sewell injured one of his hands, smashing a car window, point to evidence of his blood and fingerprints on the vehicle. A search of his home 6 days later found balaclavas, knives and an axe in his bedroom, and blood and knuckle dusters in his Volkswagen Golf. Yes, that is very bad to be raided and all that.
Of course he drives a Volkswagen.
Volkswagen, yes.
I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, so it goes...
So an injured hand.
It goes further down here that, the constable said Sewell had shown a remarkable grandiose in himself and the white race, and claimed that police were concerned his erratic, volatile behavior, and he had a propensity for violence. This is an extremely concerning behavior. And what is that? It says here, under cross-examination, the detective acknowledged there were inconsistency in the hiker's statements, and the investigators couldn't definitely say which of the neo-Nazis produced weapons or demanded phones. Some hikers were petrified of reprisal attacks and not given statements. The hiker's phones were not recovered. Sewell's defense counsel, Kieran Reynolds, said Mr. Sewell faced up to 2 years in custody before his case got to trial. That is quite accurate. They could have given him conditions such as a curfew and him staying with his father, Anthony. And prosecutor Lachlan Cameron said phone calls from prison in which Mr. Sewell urged supporters to investigate the alleged victims showed the accused man posed a risk of interfering with witnesses. So that was one of the mainstream media reports on it. He's being held, Thomas Sewell, at the Melbourne Assessment Prison, which is also where Neil Erickson is serving out his sentence for disturbing Islamic prayers. He should be released next week. Neil Erickson, he hasn't missed much with his 1 month sentence. I mean, we've basically
you got a 1 month sentence too, Tim.
Yeah, we're in the third week of our sentence with some extra privileges. And also at the Melbourne Assessment Prison are also two anti-lockdown activists, Nick Patterson, who at the one of the anti-mandatory vaccination rallies in Melbourne on June the 1st, when Melbourne was in lockdown, he has been charged with assaulting police. And also the next day, Pastor Paul Furlong, he was also arrested and charged with incitement for holding a religious gathering during lockdown outdoors. So there are four, you could say, political dissidents at the Melbourne Assessment Prison, which, so the MAP, as it's called, is basically Victoria's local gulag for
the gulag inside the gulag.
Yes.
But yeah, I wonder, it does seem strange even to hold somebody as crazy as Thomas Sewell for 2 years, because, you know, court cases take a very, very long time, as I am discovering with my civil case against the New Zealand police. We are well into our second year, hoping to have another hearing very soon, next month or so. I think we'll finally get in front of a judge next month. So that's after, 16 months or so, we'll actually get to present something to a judge and hopefully get some movement on the case.
Yeah. Well, since we are in our, third week of lockdown here in Melbourne, and it's a Friday night before the weekend, this is when, the Victoria police delivery minions do their rounds, personally hand-delivering letters to anti-lockdown activists around Melbourne, which are from Assistant Commissioner Luke Cornelius, a.k.a. Chief Wiggum, a.k.a. Fat Bastard.
I saw the video from Avi Yemeni getting a police hand-deliver mail to him.
Yes.
So, he's been on a roll, by the way. I don't know if people have seen Avi's videos on his Telegram channel or his YouTube channel.
Luke Cornelius, he has gotten people's names wrong on these letters and sent off draft.
Oh, lovely, of course. I trust the police to be incredibly competent. I'm sure they can do this. In fact, police are so competent now that we have to get the FBI involved in our local cases. We had a big honeypot operation. I believe it was global. They made a number of arrests in New Zealand.
It was in Australia. Australia as well. I can't believe these gangs fell for it. This sting using encrypted app called Anon. Spelt with not an O, but a zero. So this was a
zero.
Yeah, this was a three-year operation by, well, included the FBI and the AFP, mm-hmm. and talks about how they uncovered 21 murder plots. Sees this is in Australia. Sees the 3,000 kilograms of drugs, $45 million in cash and assets. There's one of the ones who unwittingly distributed the app, A.M. IAC. Yeah. This was big news on Tuesday morning when Australian Federal Police executed the raids, but I sort of shrugged my shoulders and criminal gangs, like, they haven't, you know, locked me in my home 22 hours a day and had put all these restrictions on my life for the past years. I mean, the real organized crime figures are still in government. This is Thomas DiLorenzo, who's a fellow at the Mises Institute.
Yeah.
Which I've
based got Mises Institute
behind his book "Organized Crime: The Unvarnished Truth About Government."
Certainly, I was going to go into the show with a story about how the top gangs in New Zealand were essentially the mongrel mob, and the New Zealand police had been taken down a few notches, and they were only in, you know, second or third or fourth place in the gang rankings. But they seem to have, with the help of the FBI, re-establish themselves the top dogs. Obviously, we had government ministers speaking to the mongrel mob a few weeks ago now.
Yes, which we covered.
Amarama Davidson, we talked about this. The human rights commissioner went to talk to the mongrel mob. The mongrel mob threatened to, two members of the mongrel mob were arrested for threatening to assassinate Simeon Brown, who's the opposition police spokesman. And Louise Hutchinson, is the official PR woman for the mongrel mob. So she's been talking about how great the gangs have been doing, how they haven't been hurting people, haven't been doing drugs. And then, of course, you get the this massive drug bust. We have yet to see if the police executed it properly, whether they get some actual convictions or not. Who knows, of course, where that will go. While I've not been personally negatively affected by gangs, we do have, shootings every week down here in South Auckland, usually gang-related events. So people are harmed by these gangs, although, you know,
as long as they shoot each other, that's as, the
main I mean, thing. Yeah, well, that's the thing. If they're shooting each other, it's...
it's in Melbourne's infamous gangland war in the 2000s, which, well... That's when Victoria Police took a dark turn using a gangland lawyer, Nicola Gobber, was a police informant, which is completely unethical. These gangland shootings are happening in public places, but thankfully there was no collateral.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the biggest collateral for gangs will be the children, especially children who are harmed in, you know, being in a lot of these drug labs and drug houses and growing up in these kinds of environments. So that is a pity, and that's something that I mentioned that Don Brash, of all people, was working to improve. So who knows, that it's not like the police are doing any real work there, it's
now we are heading towards the last 10 minutes of the show. We are only live on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channels tonight. Duo couldn't get Odyssey to work this week.
Well, it's been working all week. It's been working all day. And then this evening, the Odyssey website won't load. So Odyssey's not loading for me. So we're not streaming.
Years with Odyssey the past week, which there's bound to be glitches from time to time. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah, I've used it every single day for the past few months, and I've had maybe 3 days or so where I couldn't get it to work. So I've been fairly happy with it, and as much as I can, I watch stuff
online. I've put the entropy link back in the live chat where you can send through super chats and also ask us questions. We have got a super chat from one of our regular super chatters, Clark Key, for US $30, which is, well, that's heaps in Australian and New Zealand dollars. Thank you so much. Yeah, who eventually told us that they were a female. We originally thought that they were a male.
So you've been misgendering. So going back to the gang situation, Origin has pointed out the children have been caught in crossfire in some of these shootings. Like a 2-year-old was killed recently. So yeah, those are the real victims of the gang violence. So. And Clarkie has left another comment as well, saying that she's been enjoying Kieran's uploads and catching up on the latest ones. So every week on Wednesdays, there is a show on the Right Minds channel that airs at 7 p.m. It's a pre-recorded, pre-edited show, and it's hosted by Tare Porere, and he's going to be angry that I butchered his name. And it's a really good show. I've really been enjoying it. He's done it for 4 weeks now, I need to share it more, do some more to promote it. But it's very, very enjoyable to watch. And he goes over all of the news in New Zealand and digs into more obscure stuff that that people would be likely to miss, because often it's stuff that I've missed too. So
we've probably got two major stories left to cover, both one in New Zealand and one in Australia. Do you want to go first with, what is it, one of your longest serving MPs is retiring?
That's right. Nick Smith had his valedictorian speech yesterday, and he retired, not voluntarily. He retired because information was leaked to the press about an employment investigation that was going on, where he verbally abused a staffer. Apparently, it was quite the altercation. Based on witness reports, they said it was really, really bad. And he decided to just resign rather than fight it out. So he'd been in there for a very, very long time. He's regarded as one of the wet MPs, very much pro climate change, a lot more liberal, and he even on his final speech, he apologized for his vote against the redefinition of marriage, and saying that he's basically his son's gay and now he's sorry for everything. And
Opposition leader Simon Bridges, didn't he also apologize for voting against?
Yeah, he didn't necessarily apologize. He sort of apologized for it, yeah, when he was leader. Bill English also apologized for it. And yeah, there may have been another one. So you mentioned in the chat that he'd cucked, which he did a long, long time ago. Some people, do say that he was very hardworking. He did pass 45 bills in his time in Parliament, but then again...
Well, passing more legislation is not necessary.
Exactly. I'm like, yeah, that's hard work, but that's not really what we're after, is it? We'd be happy with some good legislation, but whether any of it was good is incredibly questionable. So I'm happy that he's gone, especially because he's being replaced with somebody much better, a South Auckland local, Agnes Lohini. She's Samoan. She's got 5 kids. She's very much anti-abortion and definitely a lot more right-wing than Nick Smith ever was. So I'm happy to see that replacement, and good riddance.
And another ongoing...
Sorry, one last thing. I did have a tweet there, if you could
put it up
on the screen. I was talking about his valedictorian speech, and he had claimed that the economy was much better when he entered Parliament. Of course, this is another thing about these politicians, right? They're in Parliament for 3 or 4 decades, and then is the country any better off than when they left? And my favorite economist, Michael Riddell, has pointed out that imports and exports have fallen, house prices have tripled, and 500,000 New Zealanders have permanently left. And of course, our productivity continues to tank. So there you go. That's the legacy of New Zealand's longest serving MP.
I can guarantee New Zealand's longest MP. That because our biosecurity international travel ban was extended for another 3 months in Australia, there'll certainly be a globalist Exeter. So when the international borders reopen, because so many of them continue to hate Fortress Australia. But of course, if you are a, what is it, a famous person, you get preferential treatment. Though if you want to see your newborn baby who had to urgently be born premature, you can't get an exemption from, well, you can't leave hotel quarantine to go to the hospital. So there was this this woman, she her baby Ilias was born 10 weeks premature by emergency C-section. Days into their quarantine period, they'd arrived back from Qatar. They were fully vaccinated, tested negative, but denied an exemption to see their own child in hospital. But now that they...
Evil.
This is, well, this is form of Anastasia Palaszczuk and her chief health officer, Dr. Jeanette Young. Now they've got the next on their list is to hunt down the Victorian escapees, since Victorians who escaped the Victorian lockdown have now tested positive for coronavirus, triggering a panic up there. And so they're probably going to get slapped. Not this couple here, but the couple who escaped the Victorian lockdown. They might need to pass the Fugitive Victorian Act. they're apparently Queensland Police are now stopping cars with Victorian number plates on to check that they are in Queensland legally. They have got a permit.
Papers, please. You'll need a repatriation treaties between the states.
So the other development this week, well, it's been an ongoing campaign by the refugee asylum seeker advocates, is this Tamil family who, what is it, came to Australia over 10 years ago. They were found not to be refugees. They're known as the Balio family, because that's where they settled in rural Queensland. They had two anchor babies while they were here, and one of them this week, their family's youngest daughter had to be medically evacuated to Perth with a blood infection and pneumonia, because they've been detained on Christmas Island after they were Border Force first detained them in 2018. Every court has rejected their refugee application. In fact, the parents went back to Sri Lanka numerous times while they're in Australia. So much for them sharing political persecution. And obviously you can see here, this image here, it's been a massive, you know, heartstrings, tear-jerk campaign by the activists there. Even Christina Keneally, Shadow Home Affairs Minister, has got on board to let them stay. I feel that this latest, you would say, twist is testing the new Home Affairs Minister, Karen Andrews, given that, well, she's not as tough as Peter Dutton, but she said they're not.
If she's a true Karen, she'd be really tough. So.
Yeah. She's not going to allow them to settle in Australia, and they're not going to be resettled in New Zealand or the United States because they're not refugees.
Yeah. And that's...
As a Melburnian, you know, my human rights have been violated as well, so they get no sympathy from me.
And, as you've mentioned, that if they've travelled back to Sri Lanka numerous times, then...
Yeah, and Australia... Yeah,
there's nothing for us to do.
The coalition government, since they returned to power in 2013, do not want to give the people smugglers an inch, given what happened with the boats under Rudd Gillard and what is happening at the U.S. southern border. Now we have
Kamala
saying, don't come.
And this is the thing that people forget, right, is when the people smugglers were up and running, there were dozens, if not hundreds of people a year who were dying, drowning, trying to illegally enter Australia. So the rules have to stay, and they have to be enforced. Otherwise, lots of people are going to die, and the only people who are going to benefit will be the people smugglers.
Christina Canillo, she actually went to visit them up at Christmas Island, and they the accommodation they were at seemed to be perfectly, well, look very luxurious. It's certainly larger than a lot of the houses and apartments that Melburnians have been imprisoned in.
Mm-hmm. And on that item, it's probably time to wrap up the show. We're about nearly five minutes over now, and we'll call it a night. And we do now have two weekly-ish shows on the Right Minds channel, as I mentioned, Wednesdays with Tare, and Fridays, either the Right Minds podcast or Trad-Tasman Talk. And sometimes the podcast gets dropped if I'm too busy, but we'll get back up and running regularly, and we'll have two regular shows on the Right Minds channel.
And I'll see my audience next for Tim's News Explosion on Monday to summarize the news of the week and the 30-minute fast digest. There'll be no Trad-Tasman Talk next week, but there will be a Wilmsfront featured show next Thursday night, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time, on the Wilmsfront channels, where my guests will be culture warrior and good cop, Evelyn Ray of Cauldron Pool. I'm very much looking forward to chatting with her.
Sounds good.
You may have seen her recently appear on Lauren Southern's channel, because Lauren Southern was, what is it, fondled by some creep in a supermarket. And so Lauren interviewed Evelyn about, you know, the right process to go through when reporting a sexual assault, or what is it? A sexual creep. Mm-hmm. And she's also been appearing regularly on Paul Murray Live on Sky News as well. So I'm very much looking forward to being with her. And Brawl in the Brain with Jared Seeby is still on hiatus because, well, as I've reminded our audience, his wife Kate hasn't given birth yet. But Jared is he's continuing to record and release his music. Jared has it a little bit easier than us here in Melbourne. Being in regional Victoria, Wodonga on the border, and he's part of the border community, so he can. Well, there's no New South Wales police on the border this time. Yeah. This is the thing that the police in Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, they basically said we've had enough of this border thing. So this is why this Victorian escapees were able to drive through New South Wales, then drive up to Woomba in Queensland, then land on the Sunshine Coast, because basically the police had enough. Yeah.
There's some good news as well, because if it's demoralizing for the police, then there's still hope for us. So
yes, yeah, Well, they tend to, during this lockdown, the Melbourne police just hang around the Melbourne CBD to see which anti-lockdown activists are around, and what is it? Yeah, sending out the Friday night.
Looking for persons known to the police.
Yeah, from Luke Cornelius. I've never gotten a letter. If I hear earthquake outside sometime tonight, then that must be, him delivering a letter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All right, everyone, that's all for tonight. And thank you for all of the comments. Good to see everybody in the chat. Thank you to Clarky for that donation. And
yes, very much.
I see from Margot as well, saying good night. And Christ is King, indeed. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Trad-Tasman Talk. Keep up with the latest real news and analysis from the Tasman Nations, visit theunshackles.net and rightminds.nz.